You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Come on, Peter. Here's your suit.
It's heartening to see so many strange new faces here today. I know my mom would be very touched and probably a little suspicious. My mother was a very secretive and private woman.
Who's gonna take care of me?
You don't think I'm gonna take care of you?
But when you die.
She wasn't altogether there. At the end.
Mom?
I don't like this. Dad, I don't like this.
What's happening?
Peter! Don't you ever raise your voice at me! I am your mother!
Please, stop!
Mom, what's happening?
I just don't want to put any more stress on my family.
Hello and welcome to another Fan Critical podcast. And this one is another commission podcast, which is great because, let's face it,
We're getting paid.
Yes, very good point. But also, there is nothing really coming out film-wise for the next couple months at least, until the studios finally, you know, realize that going to the cinema is not a very good idea and they're just going to release everything on Disney Plus, which seems to be what's going to happen with a lot of films, which is great.
And, well, that's fine. You know, I literally just signed up, so that would work.
Yeah, well, that Marvel-wise, Gareth, we're laughing. This is Gaz. Gaz is with me today. Say hi.
Hello. Yeah.
Terrible introduction, but it'll do. But yes, so everything hopefully will be just released straight to Disney Plus and in selected theatres where obviously COVID isn't ravaging the landscape.
So not here in
humanity.
Melbourne.
So not here in Melbourne, because we are in stage four lockdown, which is why once again we are remotely podcasting with each other. Although it was very nice to hear that Emma and John, who just recently did our other commission podcast on No Country for Old Men, which was released a few days ago or today or whatever, they were in the same room. So that was nice to have them back recording in the same studio. I'm doing studio in little quotation marks because if you ever see our studios, you will realise they're the furthest thing possible from a studio.
Mate, yeah? You've got a pretty professional setup there.
Yeah, well, when I move house, Gareth, I've ordered some really good kit. So let's just say the studio is being crafted. So this is a commission podcast, and it's from our lovely Patreon, Chris Mayer, who recently commissioned us to cover Ari Aster's second feature-length horror movie, Midsommar. Now, you guys out there might have listened to that one. If you have, we've had some good feedback from that one, Gareth. Apparently, it went very well.
Well, that's good. That's always nice.
Always nice to hear.
Well, it's easy. It's easy when it's such a great film that we love talking about.
Yeah. So guess what? Chris has sat there and gone, that was so good. Do the first one that you kept talking about in that one, Hereditary. So today we're going to be talking about Ari Aster's first smash hit horror movie, Hereditary, which took the horror world by storm and got glowing praise from a lot of critics. And I'm going to say some mixed reviews from audiences. Now, I'm going to say this. If you haven't seen the film Hereditary, please do go watch it, then come back, as there's going to be spoilers for the film Hereditary. And honestly, I think this film, you need to sort of experience it before you listen to this, because some of the stuff in there is just mental and terrifying, if you're that way inclined.
Yeah, I mean, not to mention, it would just be really weird to listen to a podcast on Hereditary if you haven't seen the movie.
Hey, some people listen to the podcast, Gareth, without watching the stuff. In fact, when we were doing a Walking Dead podcast, I know a lot of people who had given up on the show and were still listening to our podcast to hear John and me go mental at the show every week. So people do it. It is a thing.
Well, each to their own.
But if you're sitting there, right, and you're wondering how the hell can people, say, hey, cover this, and then we actually listen and do it, well, it's a very good answer. There's an answer to that. You can go to patreon.com/fancritical. That's patreon.com/fancritical.
What can you do once you're there?
Well, on there, you'll see that there's several different options, or tiers, as we call them. And you can become a form of a blueberry. You know, we've got several different forms of blueberry.
Clever,
you know, you've got your regular blueberry, you've got senior blueberry, you've got elite blueberry. You know, I've forgotten the tiers myself, but they're all blueberry related. And they all have different things. All get you bonus content, episodes, you know, that we've recorded of Cast It, where we recast films and TV shows with new actors, or a dream cast, if you will, sometimes with different rules and parameters that make it quite hilarious, I will say so.
Was that a Scottish accent?
Yeah, I don't know what it was, to be honest. I have no idea, but I've lost the plot a bit. Sunday afternoon, stage four lockdown, this is what happens. You can also get access to our Discord server, and there is a tier which, you know, may seem a little bit pricey, but I think it's a decent
bargain. Well, don't say that. It's perfectly reasonable price.
It helps us make stuff, yeah? But it's good when you think about the quality that we're going to give you right now, yeah?
Yeah.
Chris is loving this.
You've paid for this, Chris. You've paid for all of this that's happening right now.
If you want to get in on that action, patreon.com/fancritical. That would be amazing. Any financial support is incredible. Helps us with hosting costs, equipment. It all goes towards the podcast.
Helps to feed you.
It does help to feed me. Currently in a state of full-time podcasting due to COVID. But, you know, enough of my plight, Gareth. It is what it is.
Did you get the care package I sent you?
No care packages yet.
Yeah, sent some bread over.
Anything for you. Yeah, that'd be nice. Freshly baked sourdough that you've taken
off. No, you get my leftovers.
Brilliant. Okay. So let's begin with Hereditary. Is there a scarier film out there than Hereditary at the moment, Gareth, in terms of in the recent horror genre world? And then I would also like you to explain the first time you saw this movie, and then could you please also blueberry this movie?
Okay. Well, is there a scarier film out there? I don't know. That, in a way, is a bit of a loaded question, and you have to start breaking down what the meaning of scary is. In terms of horror movies that I like, there are... my favourite type of horror film is a horror film that doesn't rely on jump scares. I don't like that element of the horror genre. And I think today's market of horror films is saturated with these jumpy scare films. Something in the dark, it gets all quiet, and then bang, something jumps out at you. And yeah, sure, that gives you a moment of fear, just an instinctive, well, jump. But it's not truly scary, is it? That's not something that disturbs you and lives with you and haunts you. And for me, the best horror films are the ones that haunt you and get inside your head and leave you ruminating on them for days to come. And I tell you, Hereditary is absolutely one of those films. It's a film that moments within it haven't left my psyche since the first time I saw it, like a year and a half ago, probably. And it's a film that it absolutely doesn't rely on jump scares. It creates a constant. There are some in there. I've chosen my words.
Very terrifying one.
I've chosen my words very carefully there. It doesn't rely on jump scares.
No. Yeah, true.
And what it does is it creates a constant state of unease. And yeah, you know, that's done through a number of techniques, I think. Like things like lighting are used incredibly in this film, I think. The sort of a shift in lighting will just reveal something that's been there the whole time that you hadn't seen.
Once again, talking about a very scary scene,
Yeah. The acting is superb, and like, to be honest, just the story, the narrative itself is really, really creepy and disturbing, as well as some absolutely batshit crazy disturbing scenes. For this to be Ari Aster's first film, it's just incredible. I'm a sucker for pagan ritual movies and like demon worship. That gets me. It really, really gets my scary bone. What is that?
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Are you going to say something else?
No, I'm not saying that.
Weird.
No, nothing like
that.
There
is a lot of nudity in this film, Gareth. That's what you're into. Weird, creepy old people. Well, and he loves a weird, creepy old person, this guy, Ari Aster. He loves them. Can't get enough of them.
I thought you were saying me. He loves making them naked as well, to be fair.
Midsommar had loads of them.
Yeah, it does. So, look, I mean, this is one of my favourite horror films. Personally, one of my favourite horror films of all time. And I don't know whether that's being hyperbolic, but that is how I feel about it. It's a Five Blueberry movie for me. I love it.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want to watch it every couple of weeks because it's horrifying and it's really upsetting.
Yeah, once a year kind of jobby.
Yeah, that'll do. But it's an incredible movie. I'd like to know what your thoughts are on this.
Well, I'll kick off with Rotten Tomatoes actually first, and it says Hereditary uses its classic setup as the framework for a harrowing, uncommonly unsettling horror film whose cold touch lingers long beyond the closing credits. And that is, I think, a very excellent way to describe the film.
Harrowing's a great word.
And also, cold touch lingers long beyond the closing credits, which is something that you discussed just there, like staying in your psyche, staying in your mind, you know, those dark moments alone in a house or whatever, and just flashing the imagery up from this movie. That's what the best horror movies do. They stay with you and they put you on edge even when you haven't seen them for years. And I will say that I remember watching this the first time with you on one of my trips over to Australia.
Before you moved here.
Before I moved here. And we watched it together. I was like, look, we've got to watch this film, Hereditary. It's supposed to be good. You're like, yeah, right, let's crack it on. It was like 3 a.m. when we finished it because we started it at like midnight.
We did start it late, yeah. Weird.
And it was dark and, you know, I'm in a foreign country. And I remember I was like sleeping in the front room or something. Anyway, it was creepy. And it stuck with me a little bit since watching that at that time. And then I've seen it probably 3 or 4 times since then. And it gets me every time. Like even the jump scares in little quotation marks get me every time. I've watched it with 3 different people now, you being one of them, another one being my girlfriend, and
this is actually
100% not. I also made her watch Midsommar, which she
stop doing that.
Hated.
If you want to keep it,
but I will say that I have actually spoken to quite a few people about this movie, and although it's got the critical acclaim and although I see it as something that's excellent, and I know you do because you just gave it 5 blueberries, there's a lot of people out there who think it's absolute trash and absolute stupid. And I respect that, because in this film, there's a lot of things going on where it descends into chaos, and by the end of it, you're just like, what the fuck is going on? And I love that. But there's a lot of people, and rightly in their own opinion, think that's stupid. My girlfriend being one of them.
I think you've got to say, though, that the chaos that it descends into is sort of, it's signaled throughout the movie. It's foreshadowed. Yeah, it's foreshadowed all the time. It's not like it's just out of nowhere.
Yeah. But that's what's great about this movie. You don't know that, like, looking back, you know that. It's got layers to it. Like, it's got moments where you're like, oh, that makes sense now, when you look back at it. But when the first time you see it, if you don't, like, do a bit of reading about this film, you don't do a little bit of rewatching, I can understand how you think it's just stupid. But I love it. It's a 5 blueberry horror film for me. It's do I think it's better than Midsommar? As a horror movie, 100%. I think it's a bit more traditional in terms of its themes. You know, like you said, demon worship, pagan rituals. Both films have something very integral at the center of them, and that is a fantastic standout performance from a female character. In Midsommar, you've got Florence Pugh, who we've already showered praise on because she's unbelievable. And in this, you've got Toni Collette, who is unbelievable as well. And I think those key acting performances make the films what they are. I think this is a better horror movie. I think Midsommar has its own sort of fucking weird genre going on. You know, we talked about it, like folk horror that is around a bit, but hasn't been around since like the Wicker Man kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. It's very Wicker Man-y. But the thing with Midsommar, like, I remember listening to an interview with, I can't remember who it was, but one of the cast members who said that Ari Aster actually sort of said a lot of this film is a comedy. It's actually a comedy. Like, it follows a lot of comedy beats. Hereditary is not a comedy. There's no mistaking
story of grief.
I think mourning. I think it's a really good question. Like, which film's better or which one you prefer? I love both of them, but I think Hereditary is tighter. I don't know exactly what I mean by that, but it makes some sense to me. I think it's sort of a more neatly packaged movie in a way.
It's one of those things that everyone will see this film differently. I see it as two films. I think there's two films in this film, and they blend into one another in the midsection. It's an interesting. That's why it's so interesting. It's just so well crafted. Like, if you were to see the end of the film, and like sort of the first 20 minutes of the film, you'd be like, how are these two films related? But they are. Anyway, so that's our general thoughts on the movie. It's a 5 bloober from us. Of course, you can let us know your thoughts. You can email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. Or as I said, go to patreon.com/fancritical, message us on there, join the blueberries, become a blueberry, commission a podcast. We're going to talk about the film in some more detail, a bit of trivia, a bit of key moments, you know, talking about the key moments of the film, what we think works extremely well in terms of the horror genre, the acting, all that sort of stuff. Before we do that, a quick little advert.
All right, let's go ahead and record this ad.
But we don't have much time, so let's be sure to hit all the high points.
Yeah, for sure. So we need to talk about how our celebrity impersonations are on point.
Gotta thank you for introducing me to the pod.
Deborah, I haven't been getting enough sleep.
They were magnets, the size of a tangerine.
That's good. And how we're so understanding of each other, you know, always willing to listen and learn from each other.
This is my least favorite movie I have ever watched.
I swear if you buy this poster.
I buy the poster. I really do. And I think people come for the movie discussion, but they really stay for the hard-hitting and important conversations.
Do we call shoes butt bottoms now?
Well, if the butt cheek goes all the way down, does it go all the way up too?
Yeah, it just wraps around.
Okay. Sounds like we've got our ad. Let's go ahead and record.
I kind of think we just did.
We're two chunks and a hunk.
Movie musings for mostly everybody.
New episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
So what you should do is definitely check those guys out. That was a pretty slick ad. And now for our ad. Not much to plug here because, as I said, it's commissioned stuff. We have been doing our How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That series, where we raid our closets of shame, where we talk about films that we've lied about for years that we've seen. So, for example, I said I'd seen Reservoir Dogs since about 1997.
Liar.
And I haven't. Liar. Shame, as they would say in the Game of Thrones world.
Shame.
Shame. Ding, ding. You know, we've just done Gladiator. Emma hadn't seen that. It's mental.
Shame. So
there's some absolute... Yeah, that is the worst one. Although there is an even worse one coming up, which where Lucy reveals that she hasn't seen Pulp Fiction. And for me, that's worse than Reservoir Dogs.
I mean, I don't understand why she's still allowed to be in the podcast, to be honest.
Also, why are we like... Why is Quentin Tarantino like a thing that we haven't seen that much of?
It's weird.
It is weird. So that's How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That? I think they are some of our more fun podcasts because we get to watch brilliant movies and have a laugh with it. So please do check those out right now. But the most important thing that I implore everybody to do, you know, if you like stuff like Hereditary, right, which we talk about now, then do check out our new podcast, Lovecraft Country Critical. Yes, Lovecraft Country. What is that? That is a show that is starting this week on HBO, and it is by an author called Matt Ruff, who has a novel which follows an African-American family or a couple of families in 1950s America, and it interweaves sort of, how do you say this, sort of themes around like films like Green Book, and then also themes from stuff like Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft. So you're getting this... at times extremely sort of interesting genre where science fiction, gothic horror and sort of racial undertones are all meshed together to create a fascinating character study. And we have our own dedicated podcast, Lovecraft Country Critical, and we would appreciate all of our listeners to go subscribe to that now and leave us a review. Our first episode will be out Monday, the 17th of August.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be amazing. The early reviews are in because obviously some people were allowed screeners and stuff, and they say it's brilliant. So we are very much looking forward to that. I can guarantee that all of our listeners, if you've enjoyed our coverage of things like Game of Thrones, Westworld, Castle Rock, you know, all of those sorts of shows, Watchmen, especially Watchmen. The Minutemen are back. So get ready for that.
And another one.
Then and another one. And another one. And a minute woman has joined us as well. So Minute Woman plus Minute Men. Then you're gonna love this show. Okay, so Lovecraft Country Critical. That's all I have to say. Let's jump into some key highlights for Hereditary. All right then, Gareth. Let's go through this film and
all right.
See what we like and see what we don't like. I think there's going to be nothing that we don't like. So, Annie Graham, played by Toni Collette, is a miniatures artist who lives in Utah with her husband Steve, their 16-year-old son Peter, and their eccentric and reserved 13-year-old daughter Charlie.
Miniatures. That's a strange way of saying that word.
Well, I believe most of our listeners are American, and I'm pretty certain that is how they would say it.
Okay, interesting.
What would you say about that? Would you say that
I'd say
miniatures is English, and miniatures I would say is American? But that's just me. I don't know.
Maybe.
Please do let us know. Write in fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. Do you say miniatures or do you say miniatures? I actually am fascinated now. In fact, I think that's more interesting than this podcast. So stop what you're doing. Send me that email right now.
Thank you.
So Charlie, she's weird, isn't she?
Yep. Gareth. Yeah. She's weird in a lot of ways. Now, I don't want to be horrible here, but she is a weird looking girl.
Aesthetically, a very strange looking girl. Yes.
Yeah.
But that adds to sort of the mystique around her character. Like 100%, she's a very mysterious and it seems like disturbed young girl. Like, you know, she's picking up dead birds and stuff, making weird little statues. She's making her own miniatures, Gareth.
Well, so she is. She's cutting off heads and making that. You know, that's a theme throughout the film.
Yeah.
And she talks in a clicking language to herself.
What I will say is, Ari Aster has, and he did this in Midsommar, he makes noises very haunting. Like, just think about it. Like, there's the clicking that in this film, right? And anyone who's seen the film knows what we're talking about. It's terrifying. And in Midsommar, there's the like the breathing thing that they do. And he's very good at creating these rhythmic, simple noises, which create shivers and, you know, down my spine, as it were. It's, you know. Anyway, let's continue with this sort of plot. So Charlie, bit weird. At the funeral of her secret, at the funeral of her secretive mother, Annie, you know, delivers this eulogy explaining their fraught relationship and her mother's extremely private life. So we know that the grandmother was a bit, you know, distant from her.
Well, you know what's weird as well? What's weird about this funeral is, like, the family there, like the Grahams, the main characters, they're like the outsiders in this funeral. They're 100%, don't know a lot of the people who are there, and there's some fucking creepy people. Like, do you remember that guy? Do you remember that guy who's just like smiling at Charlie? Like, creepy. It's so weird. Anyway. That straight away gives you this sense of unease, doesn't it? Where it's like, right, what is going on here? Why don't they know the people at their... why doesn't Toni Collette know the people at her own mum's funeral? And it just gives you a sense of them being outsiders to this malevolent group.
They are definitely outsiders. And at this point, you're sort of like, okay, it's just, you know, pretty standard stuff. It turns out that, like, after this funeral, a week later, the grave of the grandmother has been desecrated. Right now, you just sort of hear that, like, a conversation between Annie and her husband, and you're like, okay, so everyone put a pin in that because it's going to come back later for sure. You're also just getting a sense of this family dynamic with Peter the son, and Charlie sort of a bit estranged in terms of a sibling relationship. You get a sense that the wife and the husband are a bit, you know, you're getting this family dynamic, you know, you're trying to figure out what's going on here, you know, how normal is this family? They're called the Grahams, they've got to be pretty normal, right? That's a pretty normal surname. But it turns out that Peter is this sort of rebellious little teenager, and he wants to go to a party. He, you know,
what surname would suit them better, out of interest, then?
Abernathy. I don't know why that came to my mind. Probably Westworld. Westworld,
eh? Yeah. Abernathy would work. I think Abernathy would work really well.
Yeah, it would. So Peter wants to go to a party, and Annie, you know, wants to say to Peter that, look, take Charlie with you. And for me, this is bizarre. In mental film, I do think this is a moment where I'm like, I don't get this at all. Like, Charlie is like, seems very young in the film. I would say she's like 12 or 13. I honestly can't remember. But,
yeah, I think she's supposed to be 13. She looks a bit younger, but yeah.
I know Peter kind of lies about what event it is. He says it's like a school event of some sort. But to take Charlie just seems bizarre to me. I know that the character of Annie, the mother, is trying to sort of support Charlie as much as she can, because she sees that she's quite a sort of distant child. And the grandmother, actually, you find out, actually was very fond of Charlie and, like, tried to raise her sort of herself in a way, and was very close with her. So it and that obviously comes back later, but it was a weird decision to see Annie let her daughter go to this party, or event in little quotation marks. I'm sure she knew what was going on. Throughout the film, at the start, you're sort of told that Charlie, you know, has a nut allergy, right? So they go to this party, and Charlie's like the youngest kid there by a mile. I don't know what's going on. Like, this is like a proper, you know, stereotypical what you see in horror movies or any sort of American film party, right? Charlie's there being weird, and she sees cake, and she's like, oh, I'm going to go eat this cake.
That's what 12-year-olds do at parties, is eat cake.
She loves cake. That is fair. That's nice. Peter's like doing drugs upstairs, whatever. Charlie has this cake, and lo and behold, it has nuts in it. And as I said, she's got a nut allergy. And you get this sort of harrowing scene where she's really struggling to breathe. Peter's panicking. They live in sort of the middle of nowhere, really. Like Utah, I imagine, is quite barren at times, like these roads, and you get a sense of that. And they're driving home. She's like choking in the back. She needs to get air. Opens the back window, and fucking hell, there's a pole there. She puts her head out the window, and it was talking about this makes me very uneasy.
Well,
it makes me feel a bit sick. I think
just quickly, an additional dynamic to that is that her head's out the window, but then Peter swerves because there's a dead animal in the road.
That's right. Yes,
that's what takes it into the pole. And it's pretty visceral.
It's not visceral in
the sound.
In terms of the sound,
is visceral.
The sound, yeah. I tell you what's haunting about it is the fact that there's this like. I tell you what actually makes me feel. I mean, let's just take it this way. There's like a 15-minute stretch of the film here, which I think is the best part of the movie. I think something about it just makes me feel sick.
Yeah.
And it's a couple of decisions that are made by Peter here. Okay, so decision number one, and we get it revealed in sort of this long shot, dead of night, barren road, headlights on the car. He's looking so distraught and like haunted instantly by the event that's just happened. He's just seen his sister get decapitated, but her body is still in the car. And you don't see this. This is all visually told through Peter's eyes. Like you just see what he's looking at. He sits in the road for a bit and then he just drives off normally. The thing that makes me sick here is he parks the car at the family home and then goes upstairs, goes to sleep, allows his mother to wake up, go out to see the car and see her decapitated daughter's body sitting in the car. Once again, you do not see this. You hear it because you hear Toni Collette's fantastic acting and screaming. Then you also see a fantastic scene with Toni Collette doing the most primal screaming I've ever heard in my life of a mother who has lost her daughter. And it is just one of the most intense sequences of films I've seen. You also get in that 15-minute sequence a flash cut of Charlie's head sitting in a sort of abandoned road on the curbside with flies all over it.
Ants,
yes, correct. And that's actually very important. And yeah, wow, talk to me, Gareth. This is... I'm not selling it short. It's disgusting, isn't it? It's just the whole thing about it. It's just disgusting.
Yeah, I don't really want to talk about it.
I'll never put my head out a car window again. And I never have, to be honest.
Honestly,
with you. And I'm never going
to
do it.
I used to do it all the time. There is no chance at all. I guess, Peter's reaction immediately after it happens is so upsetting, like, you know, just that shock. And you're right, he just sits there after it's happened and just doesn't know what to do. And I mean, fuck me, yeah, he just goes to bed. That's not cool.
I can't, mate. It's just for me, the as I said, Annie waking up, going down, like thinking it's a normal day, walks outside, sees her son's car there, and there's just a... This is what's powerful about Ari Aster's storytelling at times. He shows you the flash frame of her head, right? And it is a flash frame. It probably lasts a second, right? But you just hear it, and you see the anguish in Toni Collette and in her acting, and like, he's very good at that. This is the problem with horror movies in general, that sometimes they show you too much. Like, let's take, for example, a film like Jeepers Creepers, which is a fantastic horror movie.
I knew you were going to say
that. Up until 70% of the way through the film. The first 70% of the way through the film, I think that's a fantastic horror movie because you're getting these glimpses of things that are going on. But then when the monster's revealed and it becomes a bit B-movie-y, it's stupid, you know? It stops being
scary. It stops being disturbing. It stops... What happens is it stops you from... using your imagination to fill in the blanks.
Which is worse most of the time.
Yeah.
And your imagination fills in the blanks here, which is why it's terrifying. You don't see her discover the body.
Yeah.
You hear it, and it's off camera, and it's very powerful. But let's move on. You know, people who have seen this film will know that that section is I think, one of the most disturbing sequences in horror movie history. Actually,
terrific acting all round as well.
Unbelievable acting. The acting in this film is unreal. Like, it's just, even Peter the kid, he's fantastic. He is fantastic. I've seen him in things like the newest Jumanji movie, for example. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
He's in that.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But it's just like, this kid, he's got great potential. He's going to be good. So basically, Annie's devastated. Mother has lost her daughter. The family is in tatters. The husband is sort of trying to hold it all together. Peter's sort of feeling Charlie's presence around the house, hearing the noise at times. It's terrifying. Annie is struggling with her miniatures now. She's got this big project coming up. Miniatures, miniatures, whatever you want. And she's also joined a sort of self-help group where she bumps into Joan. Now
from The Leftovers,
unbelievable actress. Oh my god, Leftovers, Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
She's unreal, Joan. Right, she is one of the best actresses I think out there at the moment. She's great in terms of the roles that she's given in shows and films. Fuck me, she's good. Like, you want to hate her, like in The Leftovers, in Handmaid's Tale, you kind of hate her, but at times you can sympathise with her as well, even though she's such a hateable character. And I think in this, she comes across fantastically well as this creepy sort of guide for Annie in this terrible moment of her life. And, you know, Joan basically helps Annie to sort of grieve, because that's what it is. It's a self-help group for, you know, grieving people. They share like coffee, tea a couple times. And then lo and behold, Joan bumps into her one time and says, Annie, you won't believe what's happened. I'm in the best place ever. I have spoken to my, I think it's her son that's died. Ooh. Or her grandson that's died. I can't remember. It's all a load of shit because it's probably all a lie. But, you know, how is this possible? You've got to come over. I'll show you how it happened. And they recreate this sort of seance where, you know, they speak to the dead, as it were. And Annie can't believe it. It's actually quite a scary little scene in a way, even though you've seen this scene told a million times in horror movies and other films and reality documentaries and all that sort of stuff. And Annie believes it so much that she takes the method. She's given the method by Joan. She takes it back to the house and wakes up Peter and her husband, Steve. And they perform a miniature sort of seance in the house.
You mean a miniature seance?
Oh, yes. A miniature is referring to a model, Gaff. Miniature is small. I don't know. But what do you think about this little seance in the house where they try to get Charlie to draw something, because Charlie was an avid sketch artist, as it was, in her young age.
I mean, we haven't spoken about her drawings, have we? They're like
terrifying.
Again, just a great way of sort of building up that tension, and that unease, and fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what's interesting about it is that I think at the start of the film, all of the Grahams would have been like cynics in terms of this sort of thing, and Annie herself is sort of, she's very clearly, she is like, I think she sort of explicitly says like that she doesn't believe in any of that stuff and whatever.
Nope.
So it's an interesting sort of portrait, I guess, of what grief can do and the desperation that somebody could have, and maybe what happens when you have those moments of devastation, that you'll do anything, you'll try anything just to just to talk to people that you've lost, I guess. It's sort of heartbreaking in itself that she's buying into it now.
It is heartbreaking, but this this scene is actually scary. It's very scary because it sort of works, but at the same time, then it gets extremely violent very quickly. The spirit seems to be very aggressive towards them. Peter ends up crying. Steve is now, who is honestly, I will say this about the husband, Steve, he is the most straight-laced character in the world. Like, he is just so, just what, you know, he is not in the mood for all this bullshit. He's also quite, not, I'm not saying he's not a strong man, but I'm saying that he's just, he is like someone who's just given up and is just doing their job. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's where just I see getting Steve. Through it. Just getting through
just
life.
Just getting through it. I feel sorry for Steve because he's just trying to get through life and then he's roped into all this shit. he's trying to keep everything together. So anyway, the seance has gone badly and you can tell that this is a trigger for the events that then unfold, which is a series of terrifying events that happen to Peter. Not only is he being haunted by the ghost of Charlie or the spirit of Charlie, but he is also seeing apparitions at school. He is
when he sees his reflection smiling back at him.
This is a terrifying scene where he is in some ways possessed by an otherworldly creature, and unable to control his motor functions at times. There's the scene in school where he puts his hand up and smacks his head on the table multiple times.
That's horrible.
There's blood everywhere. It's terrifying, terrifying. You've got Annie, who is also haunted and is trying to break a cycle, believes that something has happened with this seance, so she goes to find Joan again. Joan is obviously at this point revealed to be, not to Annie herself, but we as the audience are let into the fact that Joan worshipped, like Charlie worshipped her grandmother. There's also images that are found by Annie of her grandmother being showered with treasures, being sort of worshipped by this cult, if you will, that Joan is a part of, and it's revealed that Joan was friends with the grandmother.
So do you remember what this cult believes in?
They believe in the specific demon of Paimon, which is, or Paimon,
I think.
Paimon. And the interesting thing about this is, and I know you've got some interesting trivia that we'll move on to, Gareth, but let's save the trivia for the end.
Sure.
It'll be interesting to know.
Give you some trivia.
It's interesting to note that some of the stuff that the grandmother's seen wearing, like the family necklace, is a symbol of Paimon. And once again, it's seeded throughout the movie. So this stuff has been there just in the background of scenes throughout the whole film. And at this point, it's gone into absolute chaos. Like, Peter's a sort of zombie-like character who's terrified. Annie is hysterical. As I said, poor Steve's trying to hold it all together.
Steve's just trying to, like, do his job and watch.
Yeah.
Watch trash TV at the end of the day. But everybody's going mental around him.
Everyone's going mental around him. Annie believes that this book that she has, the sketchbook or whatever it is, if they destroy that, it'll break this horrible, weird spirit that's lurking around the house or whatever. So she implores Steve to burn the book in the fireplace, and you know, they throw it in the fireplace, and then Steve sets on fire and dies, basically. At the same time as this happens, Annie is possessed. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of the demon world and pagantry and all this shit, but I will say I saw this coming. Is terrifying. And a character that we sympathize with throughout the whole film in Annie, who is honestly some of the best acting I've ever seen from Toni Collette, ever. And she's a fantastic actress. It's horrible to see her just devolve into this essentially exorcist type character.
I think it's safe to say, realistically, Annie dies at the moment that Steve catches on fire. Because the moment she's possessed, she's not Annie.
It's you know, the film is called Hereditary for a reason. It is because the family line is devoted to Paimon, and it has been ordained. You know, and we're about to find out about why this is in the family, as it were. So what happens then is poor little Peter, who's been sort of knocked out from smacking his head on the table. And
he's had a horrible day. He has had a horrible day.
Oh, my word. He's having a bad time. He wakes up to find the house at nighttime. He goes downstairs, finds his father burnt alive, a charred, crisp, stinking mess on the floor. And it's disgusting. And then this is when me and you are watching the film, Gareth, and we're just like, for the first time, we're just like, what is that in the back corner?
Oh, God.
And there's just, so not only is there just a weird naked man standing there with a creepy face, like with a little todger.
He's got his little todger out.
You don't even realise because you're looking at the naked guy. But in the top
corner. Well, you were looking at the naked guy.
In the top, on the ceiling is Toni Collette, like full possessed demon. And then she scuttles off, terrifying. And you're like, what the fuck was that? And then when the camera shifts position, she's just lurking in the background and you don't really see her. And then she just springs out of the darkness to honestly the scariest thing I've ever seen. Like, that is the scariest jump scare I've ever had in my life. I don't jump, and I jumped out of my fucking chair when that happened. It's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
That is terrifying. So this part of the film is excellent horror stuff because it is balls to the wall crazy. It is Toni Collette possessed, chasing Peter through the house with weird naked people standing around in this sort of woodland cabin. He's up in the attic. He discovers his grandmother's, remember I said, the grave was desecrated, discovers her headless corpse that has been rotting there for like 3 weeks, so it's disgusting, with pagan imagery all around it. You've got Toni Collette banging her head on the attic door, sawing her own head off.
With right? a fucking piano wire.
With a piano wire. No shit. This is mental. To the point where it becomes evident that Peter's only escape is jumping through the window. He jumps through the window. Some sort of spirit goes into him. He wakes up, strolls to the treehouse, which was a favourite place of Charlie's. And, you know, Toni Collette sleeps in there in the film sometimes because she misses Charlie so much. Goes up. There's more naked people. Two headless corpses worshipping a throne. And Joan, blessed Joan, comes across and goes, yep, you are Pyman. We've had to do all this to get you in that body. We worship you. Please, you know, shower praise. What a shit. Just weird. Just weird. And the film ends. And that's it. You have this absolute chaotic ending where it all just descends into... This is why people don't like it, because it goes so supernatural. I think, you know, there's elements of the film that make you think, oh, what's going on here? But then it goes full, like, no, this is supernatural. This is fucked up. What do you think, Gareth? Great ending.
Yeah, I mean,
I know.
That ending, it's unreal. But, like I said, I don't think it would work if it hadn't been...
Yeah.
Hinted at throughout. If it hadn't been foreshadowed, but there are those bits. So, you know, when you maybe you don't get it immediately after watching it, and you're in a state of shock, I suppose, probably
you are
immediately
in shock. You're shocked.
You're like, what the fuck was that last 15 minutes? That was unreal. But like the image of Toni Collette sort of being
sawing sort of, her own head off.
Yeah, but also whilst kind of being, she's sort of hanging as well, like she's hovering above. It's just horrific. And the sound of her doing it, you can just hear like...
Yeah, and then you just hear the head fall off. Like you just hear God. It. It's terrifying.
Yeah, those moments... Those are real horror moments. That is what they are.
And, you know, it's fantastic acting all around from everybody here. Peter's having a bad day. He said he acts it fantastically well. Turns out that basically the whole situation was that Charlie was Pyman, this demon from hell. And we're going to talk about Pyman in a second. But also the fact is that obviously Charlie was a girl, and that doesn't work for them in terms of pieman. He needs to be in a male host body. So the plan was always to be that the grandmother would die. And when she did, they would sort of orchestrate this whole scenario where they would be able to kill Charlie, get the spirit of pieman, and then do a ritual to make it inhabit that of her older brother Peter's body. So that it could fulfill the destiny and all that sort of shit. So, yeah, that's the situation. Charlie was always the demon pieman, which is extremely interesting. And now Gareth is going to talk to us about pieman.
Well, pie I've just got a couple of...
on, Gareth. Pie on.
Pie. The pie man. Doesn't sound that scary, does he?
I want a pie right now. I'm very hungry. Yeah. And it's a Sunday. Perfect for pies.
Very good. But... he and Pyman's or Payman's pronoun is he, was supposedly one of the devil's sort of subservient demons, and was renowned for being particularly sort of willing and obedient to the devil's. Devil's wishes. So he was like a little suck up.
He's a lieutenant yeah. of Satan.
But what's interesting is that there's a couple of moments that are in this film that I didn't know this about it until I read up. So he's described in the literature as a man riding a camel. You see that drawing a few times.
On the necklace. You see the necklace is a humped sort of animal thing. I can't remember what it is, but there are humps.
A camel, perhaps. But a man riding a camel preceded by a group of people playing music, and that music is predominantly, can you guess what instrument, Len? Think about the movie, think about the ending.
A piano wire.
No, I see where you're going, but no.
Yeah.
Trumpets. And trumpets feature heavily in the movie as well. I really like that. Also,
when the saints go marching in, just on the trumpet. Yeah, I remember that bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Big time. Also, he's often described as having a woman's face, but is still described using masculine pronouns. So. That is an interesting, I think what Ari Aster's done there is sort of taken that element and turned that into maybe an additional bit of folklore, because I don't think there's any sort of long-term desire from Pyman to inhabit the body of a man, but it's just that is an element of the demon's character that's been explored there, which I find pretty cool. Creepy little fucker is Pyman, and done very well in this movie.
I'm fascinated by this sort of whole, because obviously this is all real, once again in inverted commas, believe what you want to believe or whatever, but there's a lot of myths and legends that go around about these demons. They're not making shit up. They're actually pulling from historical context, whether it be biblical, whether it be Satanists or all this sort of stuff. And I'm fascinated by that, because there's some weird fucking stuff out there, man. And this is like, the people in this film worship a lieutenant of the devil, and they believe that they will be showered with fortune and prosperity by bringing him to power. It's fascinating to me how these, and let's not sugarcoat it, there's probably cults all around the world that are doing this shit, but we just don't know about it. That's what's terrifying to me.
Of course, terrifying. And like, this is Pyman comes from a book called The Lesser Key of Solomon, which is like it's a spell book on a demonology spell book, and I think it was made in sort of the 17th century. But what I love about it is that it was written up in the 17th century, but it's based on stuff that existed for centuries before that. So somebody has just found these old manuscripts or whatever and kind of compiled them and put them together. And you just terrifying. Wonder, like, where does it come from? Who
How much
has...
of it is true? How much of it is true? Do we know? Like, there might be kernels of truth in it. I mean, it depends how religious you are. It depends on if you believe in other worlds and demons and God and angels and all this stuff. But how much of it is true? I find that sort of stuff fascinating. As you said, that this whole element of the movie, the sort of demon worship element, which is very tropey and can be very tropey, is actually extremely well done in this film. And I think it's to its credit that it does such a good job with such a overdone subject matter. And it also makes us research and think about it afterwards. So well done, yeah. Ari Aster. Very good film.
Well done.
And that's it, really, for our review of Hereditary. I mean, it's an incredibly, I don't know, just affecting horror movie. And if you haven't seen it, and you have listened to this, harrowing. And we've spoiled it for you, just watch it. Because I don't think, even if you've just listened to this and you've heard it, seeing it is different. Experiencing it. Any final Agreed. Thoughts, Gareth?
I was just... looking up today, like, what Ari Aster's going to do next, because I can't wait.
Yeah, we talked about
whatever
this.
It is. I know. And it's just, what a promising start. Like, for this to be your first, your directorial debut is phenomenal. And he's playing with a lot of the themes that I think are the most effective in horror films. Great movie, great director already, and I can't wait to see more of his stuff.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing with horror films is sometimes they are very hit and miss. Like, even great directors do have missteps. I think Ari Aster is a very out there director. I think his style is, as I said, you either love it or you hate it.
Yeah,
but at the same time, he's got potential in him to do other great films, but let's just say he has also got the potential to make some stinkers, I'm sure, because the way he curates films, seems very opinionated, he seems very certain on his style, and it won't always work, but I like directors that try things. I like people that try and subvert our expectations, and I think he's doing a fantastic job so far. Midsommar, Hereditary, 2 5 Blueberry horror movies, and my 2 favorite horror movies of the last 3 years, easily. So also very excited to see his next epic, which is meant to be like 3 hours long and whatever, meant to be like a I can't remember what he called it. Some sort of comedy again. He called it some sort of comedy or something. I was like, oh God, what's this going to be? But yeah, that's it. Thank you very much, Chris, for commissioning this podcast. It has been a lot of fun talking about a horror film that I love. Something that we didn't get to cover when it initially came out, because I don't think we existed when this originally came out. So
no, we did. We did. I don't know what our excuse is, to be honest.
We were probably doing some shitty Walking Dead coverage or something, getting drunk Westworld. All the time. Yeah, well, no, Westworld Season 1, brilliant, so don't have a go at that. But I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank you, Gareth, for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for being there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our coverage of Lovecraft Country, and that is how we're going to end this podcast, is once again saying, check out Lovecraft Country. Go watch the trailer. See if you like the look of it. If you do, watch the show on HBO. Find another way to watch it if you need to, and then come listen to us. That's all I have to say. Lovecraft Country, critical. Thank you, Chris, for the commission. Thank you for listening. Thanks, Gaz. See you later. Thanks, everybody, mate.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.